bearing that suits the man of wisdom. Now, how can these things be equal when we compare them, if you grant that we ought to pray for the one and avoid the other? If we would make distinctions among them, we had better return to the first good, and consider what its nature is. The soul that gazes upon truth, that is skilled in what should be sought and what should be avoided, establishing standards of value not according to opinion, but according to nature. The soul that penetrates the whole world and directs its contemplating gaze upon all its phenomena, paying strict attention to thoughts and actions, equally great and forceful, superior alike to hardships and blandishments, yielding itself to neither extreme of fortune, rising above all blessings and tribulations, absolutely beautiful, perfectly equipped with grace as well as with strength, healthy and sinewy, unruffled, undismayed, one which no violence can shatter, one which acts of chance can neither exalt nor depress. A soul like this is virtue itself. There you have its outward appearance, if it should ever come under a single view, and show itself once in all its completeness. But there are many aspects of it. They unfold themselves, according as life varies and as actions differ. But virtue itself does not become less or greater, for the supreme good cannot diminish, nor may virtue retrograde. Rather is it transformed, now into one quality and now into another, shaping itself according to the part which it is to play. Whatever it has touched, it brings into likeness with itself and dies with its own color. It adorns our actions, our friendships, and sometimes entire households, which it has entered and set in order. Whatever it has handled, it forthwith makes lovable, notable, admirable. Therefore, the power and the greatness of virtue cannot rise to greater heights, because increase is denied to that which is superlatively great. You will find nothing straighter than the straight, nothing truer than the true, and nothing more temperate than that which is temperate. Every virtue is limitless, for limits depend upon definite measurements. Constancy cannot advance further, any more than fidelity, or truthfulness, or loyalty. What can be added to that which is perfect? Nothing otherwise that was not perfect, to which something has been added. Nor can anything be added to virtue either, for if anything can be added thereto, it must have contained a defect. Honor, also, permits of no addition, for it is honorable because of the very qualities which I have mentioned. What then? Do you think that propriety, justice, lawfulness do not also belong to the same type, and that they are kept within fixed limits? The ability to increase is proof that a thing is still imperfect. The good, in every instance, is subject to these same laws. The advantage of the state and that of the individual are yoked together. Indeed, it is as impossible to separate them as to separate the commendable from the desirable. Therefore, virtues are mutually equal, and so are the works of virtue, and all men who are so fortunate as to possess these virtues. But since the virtues of plants and of animals are perishable, they are also frail and fleeting and uncertain. They spring up, and they sink down again. And for this reason, they are not rated at the same value. But to human virtues, only one rule applies. For right reason is single and of but one kind. Nothing is more divine than the divine, or more heavenly than the heavenly. Mortal things decay, fall, are worn out, grow up, are exhausted, and replenished. Hence, in their case, in view of the uncertainty of their lot, there is inequality. But of things divine, the nature is one. Reason, however, is nothing else than a portion of the divine spirit set in a human body. If reason is divine, and the good in no case lacks reason, then the good in every case is divine. And furthermore, there is no distinction between things divine. Hence, there is none between goods either. Therefore, it follows that joy and a brave, unyielding endurance of torture are equal goods. For in both, there is the same greatness of soul, relaxed and cheerful in the one case, in the other, combative and braced for action. What? Do you not think that the virtue of him who bravely storms the enemy's stronghold is equal to that of him who endures a siege with the utmost patience? Great is Scipio when he invests Numantia and constrains and compels the hands of an enemy whom he could not conquer to resort to their own destruction. Great also are the souls of the defenders, men who know that as long as the path to death lies open, the blockade is not complete. Men who breathe their last in the arms of liberty. In like manner, the other virtues are also equal as compared with one another. Tranquility, simplicity, generosity, constancy, equanimity, endurance. For underlying them all is a single virtue, that which renders the soul straight and unswerving. What then, you say? Is there no difference between joy and unyielding endurance of pain? None at all, as regards the virtues themselves. Very great, however, in the circumstances in which either of these two virtues is displayed. In the one case, there is a natural relaxation and loosening of the soul. In the other, there is an unnatural pain. Hence, these circumstances, between which a great distinction can be drawn, belong to